It's time for another edition of Making Money with the financial coach, Ron Hebert, retired portfolio manager. That means he managed people's affairs financially, folks. I'm a retired broadcaster, Gord Whitehead. Ron and I have known each other for about 40 years. We love talking about investing. We both are passionate about it. I didn't make my living doing it, but I certainly like to pay attention to it. And Ron, we often stress, and I don't want to sound repetitive, but we're trying to educate people with this show. We try to talk about things that you don't see a lot of exposure in media coverage or anything like that. And that's why we say to our listeners, if you have a show question or a suggestion, feel free to shoot it along to us. And it'll maybe take a little bit of time to put the show together, but we do our best in that regard. And this is one of those instances. We talk about investment cycles, and we've had questions that might pop out about a particular cycle that comes up with investing. And you've put together a list, and we're going to break this into two shows because there are 17 different cycles that you have itemized here. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, there's, and people have to realize the year has 365 days and four seasons. Some cycles are short, like the daily tides, and some are long, like the seven-decade circuit of Halley's Comet. And even markets and economies go through cycles. So we want to identify them, and as many of them as we possibly can over two shows. And we want to take a look at and make a decision on whether the cycle is worth looking at or whether the information just is too erratic, too undisciplined for it to make any difference. So this is going to be a show because you're always hearing about, as you say, Gord, you're always hearing about this cycle and that cycle, and it can be very confusing for the average person. So we're trying to explain what they are and point out the ones that could be useful to the investor.
All right, this first one, I don't even know how you pronounce this name. Is it Kondratieff?
Yeah, I've heard it pronounced a number of ways, but Nikolai Kondratieff is essentially a Russian economist, and he noticed that there were long cycles, starting with a boom and ending up in the bust. And if you go back, and I included a chart here, which both you and I are looking at, Gord, and if you go back to the 1780s, that's when he first started noticing these cycles. According to anybody that's a follower of his strategy, we've had five of these cycles since the 1780s. And the last boom bust cycle ended in 2009 with the financial crisis. The previous one was in the 1970s with the hyperinflation and the high interest rates that ended in 1981. That's when we had the bust. And the one previous to that was the 1930s with the Great Depression. So according to this, we get a major economic reset every 40 to 60 years. Now, is this useful for the average investor? Well, this is probably too broad a range to be helpful, but if you've gone a long time and the market hasn't got its bell rung, your good chances that the components that cause these things, the factors that are behind them, are starting to build, and then you have a blow off, which cleans all the overpriced, all the uneconomic stuff off the plate, and starts all over again. It's not pretty, but that's how capitalism works.
And he uses really rudimentary things like agriculture and the one in the 1780s he attributed to the invention of the steam engine. So, you know, I'm sitting here thinking now about AI. Could we be at the dawn of another one of these cycles with artificial intelligence? Maybe.
We certainly could, you know, Gord, because, you know, we're seeing AI. We're just seeing there's going to be an absolute revolution in the way things are going to be done over the next decade or two. And so, you know, we certainly could be at the beginning of another one of these cycles. And, of course, some of the problems with this is these cycles can be interrupted by war, they can be interrupted by trade wars, they can be interrupted by a lot of things, by weather. You know, if we had an ice age in here, that could interrupt it. You know, climate change of any type, whether it got warmer, You know, so there are factors that can extend or shorten these things. But they begin with a boom, with generally new invention of new technology, and they end when the technology isn't producing as big advantages anymore. Things get overpriced, too much debts get taken on, and things need to be restructured, cleaned up. And generally, the bust part of the cycle represents the recalibration of the economy, sweeping away the stuff that doesn't work and replacing it with the tender leaves of new shoots that can grow, if you're looking at a gardening example. So, you know, these long cycles, you know, they're worth watching, but as far as the trading strategy, it's very hard to place your bets on a 60-year cycle.
Yeah, exactly. You may not even be conscious enough to make the decision when the time comes. Exactly. Yeah. All right. So now here's one that I think a lot of people might be familiar with, because we're heading into an election here in Canada next year, but this year in the United States. The presidential cycle has been talked about a lot, has it not?
And the presidential cycle, actually, if you go back and look at the longer term, the presidential cycle works. And it's based on the 4 years between elections. In the first year after an election, and you go back to 1928, markets are up 6.7% on average. In the second year, that's the weakest year of a four-year cycle. The annual gain's only 3.3%. And many of those years have actually been negative, and decidedly so. The third year is the best year of the cycle, and on average, markets are up 13.5%.
That's when they start spending, right?
Yeah, and that's exactly it. I mean, people want to get reelected. Isn't that how it works?
Yeah.
So the only notable exceptions to the third year are 1931, when we're in the middle of the Great Depression, and 1939, which started World War II. But other than that, the third year has been by far the strongest. And if you go back to 2023, which was the third year of the cycle, the S&P 500 had an awesome year. It was up 24%. So it looks like, you know, that was another big year in the cycle. Now, the fourth year is the second best performer, and it shows gains of 7.5%. So anecdotally, the first couple of years of a presidential cycle, the returns aren't nearly as good. And if you want to be in the markets, historically, the best 2 years to be in are the third and fourth year, because that's when everybody opens the purse strings, both Republicans and Democrats. They're pushing through their agendas because they want to use that to attract voters. And in the first 2 years, that's when tough love gets issued. If there's going to be any punitive legislation, it's going to be in the first 2 years, because the politicians know that the average investor doesn't have more than a two-year memory. And most of the stuff that happened in the first 2 years, especially the first 100 days of a presidential cycle, are going to be long forgotten by the time the next election comes around.
Okay. Now, some of these are yearly. And we've talked about this. We've looked at this cycle in a little more in-depth than one of our previous shows. That's the Halloween cycle.
Yeah, no, that's the yearly cycle. And what it does is it takes the markets and it breaks them down into six-month spans. And you'll find that since 1977, if you look at the S&P TSX Composite Index, between November and April, on average, over that long span of almost 40 years, markets are up 8.2% per year during that six-month period. But if you look at the period between May and October, markets are up only about 1.7%. So the return differential between these two six-month spans is so great that some investors move into the markets between November and April and then spend the next half year sitting in money market or cash, waiting for the cycle to repeat itself. So not much is being gained by being in the markets between May and October, but often May through October tend to be the best months
to find bargains.
To find bargains. So, you know, if you want to play the cycle, and I've got friends, frankly, that's how they invest. They go into an exchange-traded ETF that's a broad market ETF. And they sit there between November and April, and then they sell out everything, put it in treasury bills, and then go spend their summer playing golf or fishing or whatever else they like to do. And then the winter, when they've got more time for it, that's when they get back in. So the Halloween cycle is a very valid cycle.
Full disclosure, I've been known to buy the odd stock in September. Anyway, all right, let's move on to the next one, the monthly stock market cycles. Now, this, to me, when I read that, when you said it to me, I thought, okay, this is for the guy who's trying to time the market, right?
Yeah. And, you know, so the S&P 500 index on average is up 73% of the time in April and 72% of the time in November. Those tend to be the two best months. And on average of the 12 months, they're up 62% of the time. The month with the lousiest returns are July, August, and September. And often they call them the summer doldrums.
Dog days of
September.
Summer. Yeah.
Yeah, long days of summer, Gord. And with September being the only month of the year where markets go up less than 50% of the time. And coincidentally, September and sometimes early October have been the months where we've had the big crashes in the market. So what does this mean for investors? Well, September is often the best month of the year actually to look for bargains in the market. So if you're a value investor, that's the time you want to be buying. Actually, when I was at the point where I was actually making RSP contributions, often I'd make them in September because those were the best months to get bargains rather than wait until January and February and make my RSP contributions then.
And then everybody's looking for bargains then, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it coincides with some of the best, the strongest six-month period. And, of course, April and November are strong months. So, you know, I like to buy when nobody else wants to buy. And so if you're an investor, maybe think of making your RSP contribution in August, September, maybe even early October, because often that's when you're going to find sometimes not only the best bargains of the year, but especially if you have a big market pullback, sometimes these are going to be the best opportunities you might even get over the decade.
So I think right now, Ron, it might be safe to say we're sitting in territory where this next one might be pertinent. That's an interest rate cycle, because we're all watching what the Bank of Canada's doing. Is the rate going up anymore, or is it going to start coming down? Is this timing pertain to this cycle?
That's exactly right. And what especially a lot of market commentators don't realize is that interest rates have historically moved in very long cycles. And to give you a brief bit of history here, rates fell over a 35-year period between 1860 and really the end of the century. Then in the next 20 years up to the roaring 20s, they were very strong. And of course, as the economy started to cool, they fell again between 1921 and 1946, and that coincided with the Great Depression.
And the war.
After the Great...
And the war,
sorry.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and a big war in there. So the next great post-war inflation boom took yields all the way up to 15% in 1981. In fact, Treasury bills in Canada reached 21%.
Oh, we remember those times.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You were probably like I was, Gord, in the days where you were struggling with mortgages at that rate to try and hang on to your house.
Yeah, 19.75% mortgage. Yeah, it's
yeah.
Whoa, what?
That's, you know, and kids complain today about how tough it is to buy a house when mortgage rates are 5%, and over the last few years, mortgage rates 5-year terms you could have gotten for 3%. So after that, rate declines essentially continued for the next 40 years, taking rates from that 19.75% that you paid down to 1% in 2021. In fact, in Europe and Japan, yields on some securities fell actually below zero, paying less than nothing. So we've had rates now going up for 2.5 years. So if you think after a 2.5-year rise, rates will immediately head south, well, all I can say is that I wouldn't be holding my breath here because history is not on your side.
All right. Pay attention to that one, friends. Okay. We've heard the term and we hear it all the time about investing. It's a bull market. It's a bear market. Those are cycles as well, are they not?
Yeah, bear markets are when markets go down. And the average bear market since 1928 has lasted 289 days. Bull markets, on average, last 991 days. So there's a difference of between about 3.6 years between bull and bear markets. And what this tells us is the math tells us that markets spend three times as much time going up as they do going down. And over the long term, gains totally overpowered declines and have given stocks a long-term average growth rate of around 10% a year. So this is a strong case. In fact, anybody that's sitting down and talking to you about why a buy and hold strategy works so successfully, and it's better than trying to time getting in and out, is just the fact that bull markets generally exceed bear markets on a 4-to-1 ratio. And so just trying to hang in there rather than bouncing in and out all the time is a very, very successful, low-risk way of making money over the longer term.
I remember you and I talking years ago about a particular stock, and I asked you your opinion on it. Your comment was, buy that stock and put it in a drawer and forget about it. Buy and hold, right?
That it's worked wonders for me. Not that I don't trade. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes, but hey, buying and holding and just getting a great name that you know is going to make money even in bad cycles is a good long-term way because it doesn't require trying to figure out when to get in.
Not a lot of maintenance there. Not a lot of maintenance, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of time.
All right, now we're in this cycle right now, I would think. The next one is Middle Eastern war and an oil price cycle. Are we not in one of those right now?
We are absolutely in one of those. And Gord, here again, this is where investors need to be paying attention and not listening to the talking heads they hear on the media. Because since 1967, there have been 20 major military confrontations in the Middle East and North Africa, and 11 of them have directly involved Israel. And anytime you hear one of these, you have the talking heads coming out and saying, well, you got to buy oil and you got to stay in it because these cycles lead to, these wars lead to long-term cycles in oil and gas to the upside. Well, other than the Yom Kippur War of 1973, which involved Israel, none of these had any lasting impact on oil prices whatsoever. And currently, oil flows haven't been impacted by Israel's scrap with the Palestinians. Oil had a short-term bump when Russia went to war against Ukraine. But right now, it looks like, if anything, rather than a shortage, OPEC is having to cut surplus production just to keep prices up. So if there's a war in the Middle East, the strategy is if you want to buy some oil as a trade, buy it, but don't stay in it for the long term because historically that's never worked out.
Okay, and the final one we want to touch on in this particular part of the cycle show, because we mentioned it's two shows and there's 17 to cover. The last one we're going to cover this week is the gold market cycle. And I've been watching gold, it seems to me, for the last 5 years. It's fascinating to me what's going on. Gold hasn't done much, and then it has a spike, and then it backs off again. So how do we look at this one?
Well, when gold has a bull market, it can be very, very profitable. So if you listen to the ads, they always snip and cut and paste the periods of time that gold's done very well. And the yellow metal has had a huge run between 1972 and 1974. It was up 100%. It also had a very strong rally between 1978 and 1980. And both of these were two-year periods. The 78 to 80 period was up 100% as well. And the previous bull market in gold was between 2007 and 2010. That saw about a 67% rally in price. Now, if you go back and look, well, the 72 to 74 rally, then there was essentially a four-year gap, and there was a rally between 78 and 80. And then it didn't do anything for really 27 years. And then it had another rally, and now then it got quiet, and really about 12 years later, I mean, well, gold started to rally last year, and gold's up to about $2,200 an ounce today. So the problem is that when people tell you that they know how to predict gold prices, well, I would disagree with that. Usually the people that tell you that they predicted this gold price rally are the same people that have predicted a real gold price rally for the last 13 years. You know, this year's going to be the big one. This year's going to be the big one. And of course, when it finally does happen, they're like a broken clock. And a broken clock is right twice a day. That's it.
Yeah.
So don't get overly enthusiastic about this. So, I mean, the last bull market was 13 years ago. The one before that was 43 years before that. So, you know, or 33 years before that. So they take a long time in happening. So I generally buy gold and I use it as an insurance policy. I've got gold coins. I've got a gold ETF and I have one gold stock. And the gold stock I will trade, but the gold ETFs and the gold coins, I buy them for the same reason I buy insurance policies. I've used my insurance policy once in my life when my garage burned down. My dog chewed through a cord, an electrical cord in the garage, and up went the house or the garage. Well, I was still glad I had it. So I don't buy insurance policies to make money. I mean, if you want to burn down your house, maybe insurance, fire insurance is a good idea. But I buy it in case the financial world blows itself up. I'm at least going to have enough money to buy groceries for a while. So, you know, trading gold market cycles is tough to do, but because it's impossible to predict. I don't know anybody who's done a good job predicting gold prices over the last 40 years. And I followed all the gurus and watched them. Most of the time, they end up with egg on their face.
All right. Well, still some to go here. I think we've covered about 8 of the 17 or something in that area. A lot of cycles that could influence investing. Cycles that you should, from time to time, pay attention to. That's what we're trying to do here. We're back next week to continue with this episode and complete the other cycles in our inventory. Hopefully you can join us. And remember, if you have a question about this, if we touched on something that you're not too clear on, send us a note. Let'smakemoney.ca is our website. We will be happy to answer it. And if it's a show suggestion or a question for a future episode of Making Money, we're happy to look at that too. On behalf of the financial coach, Ron Hebert, I'm Gord Whitehead. Hopefully you can join us next week.
The information presented is derived from sources believed to be reliable. This material is presented for information purposes only and does not constitute investment advice. Before acting on any investment information, a person should seek advice from an investment professional. The presenters may or may not hold positions in the securities discussed on this show and will not be responsible for any losses sustained from acting on this information.